Okay, good evening, everyone. Thank you for coming to the summer kollel. I want to acknowledge the presence of my dear father and my brother Pinny for coming as well to this year. I want to thank Avrumi also for arranging and for crying for all the food, and Lucy also as well as involvement in the summer's kollel. So two introductions. One is that whatever you're going to hear tonight, you're probably not going to hear anywhere else. And the second introduction is that we'll take as many questions as possible. Because we have a tremendous amount of ground to cover, if it's possible to keep all the questions until the end, depending on how late it gets. So last month, I had the ability to travel to Virginia, and I drove through a tremendous amount of highways and hundreds of miles, probably 800-900 miles. It was 10, 12 hours in the car. You don't have to feel bad for me, because Baruch Hashem had the ability to learn 10 hours in the car, and it was divided. However, in the travels, I also was able to pass many, many rest stops. The McDonald's on the rest stop, and there's Burger King on the rest stop. And the question came up is that I'm unable to go into a rest stop to use the restroom or to buy unflavored coffee. What are the halachas regards in the rest stops? This has to do with the concept of Maris Ayin. Now, Maris Ayin means that you have to do something which is clean. B'isin nekiyam Hashem Yisrael, we all have the obligation to be able to make sure that people don't learn from our actions, or people don't think, oh, this person's doing it, it must be that it is allowed. Therefore, Chazal say, you have to make sure to only do actions which are clean. And that aspect, but Maris Ayin is a big issue, because you're going to go into a McDonald's and you're going to buy something which perhaps is going to be kosher, but people are going to see you walking in. Chazal bring down Maris Ayin in many places in Halacha. It's brought down in Hilchos Shabbos, and it's brought down in Hilchos Yerideya and Siman Pei Zayin. Now, in Yerideya and Pei Zayin, it brings down the Halachas of Maris Ayin. Why? Because you're not allowed to cook milk and meat together. We know Chazal say you're not allowed to cook it. If I would ask you why you're not allowed to cook milk and meat together, I'm sure you won't know, because it's just a chayt. You know, Pasuk says you're not allowed to cook milk and meat together. However, I deal with many, many non-Jewish people on a regular basis, and they ask me, Rabbi, you never had a cheeseburger? I said, no, we're not allowed to cook milk and meat together. And they never understood why. Once I went to Rebelsky's Atzal, and I asked them, I said, Rebbe, how do I explain to the non-Jews why you're not allowed to cook milk and meat together? And they said, very simply. In order for you to eat meat, what do you have to do? You have to kill the animal. Because in order for the meat to come out, you're not going to eat it raw. You have to kill the animal. When we eat milk and drink milk products, we don't have to kill anybody. And that's represented by life. And therefore, Chazal say, we don't want to mix death and life. Life and death are separate. Meat is death. Milk is life. We keep everything separate. And that's why you don't mix the two. But getting back to Tamara's Lion question, if we're going to be talking about milk and meat, we're not going to cook it. But what about power of milk? So Ramah says, you want to use power of milk, you put almonds on the table, indicating that the almonds obviously are not real milk. It's power of milk, and therefore, Chazal say, in order for it not to be an issue with Marasayan, you put it on the table. Now, according to that, nowadays, we don't have almonds made from milk and things like that. We're not putting almonds on the table. We have almond milk and oat milk, but we're not putting almonds on the table. So many of the places can say, you want to do power of creamers, power of ice cream, margarine. That is the equivalent of milk made from almonds. However, the Badei HaShulchan is the only place that says nowadays we'd have to put the container on the table, because people don't know that there's margarine and there's power of a creamers, and therefore you put it on the table. That indicates of Maris Ayin nowadays, even though we know that there's a tremendous amount of power of products. The Badei HaShulchan says you still have to put the container on the table, but no one else holds like that. And Halacha is, so you do not find that at weddings or other things where meat is served, they will have power of containers on the table. Now, if we take this a step further, Moshe Feinstein, that's out of the tshuva, he says, what about going into a rest room in Manhattan? You go to a restaurant in Manhattan, you want to use the bathroom. He says, because of the fact there's so many restaurants in Manhattan that are kosher, you shouldn't be going into a non-kosher restaurant to use the restroom. However, the Abiyo Aymer has a tshuva, and he says, because nowadays it's known that the concept of Marasayan exists, but it's so common to have all these different things on the table that are power, he takes it a step further. He says, there's no issue of Marasayan going into a rest stop, because everyone knows you're not going into a rest stop to buy something that's not kosher. You're going to use the restroom. And because you're going to use the restroom, there's no concern of Marasayan. In addition, about using the restroom, you're also able to buy an unflavored coffee at a rest stop because of the issue of Marasayan doesn't exist. So Hurdle Schechter, Shlita maintains, you're right, there's no concern of Marasayan, but if you're going to go to a McDonald's, or you're going to go into a Burger King, and then you're going to sit next to the big window that's usually common at a rest stop, that is not allowed, because people don't know what necessarily is going to be by your table when they're looking from afar, and therefore you should not be sitting by the large tables at a rest stop. Fine, so we discussed going into buying coffee at a rest stop and using the restroom. Now, let's extend it a little further. which is a common question that come up when you're traveling. Fine, you're going to a rest stop, using the bathroom, you're buying unflavored coffee. What about going into a Dunkin' Donuts? Now, in order for you to understand what Dunkin' Donuts, how it works, you have to understand the intricacies of manufacturing. Now, Dunkin' Donuts, let's take one thing at a time. Dunkin' Donuts doesn't actually manufacture any of the donuts on site. Usually Muhammad or someone else in that kind of name gets together with his friend and says, you know what, we want to open a lot of Dunkin' Donuts and we want to be able to bake donuts and sell it to the public. So what happens is they make products in a satellite bakery. That means they own another bakery offsite where they make all the donuts there, and then it gets shipped every morning. It has like crates and racks that get shipped in the car and in the trucks, and it goes into the local stores. Now, obviously, if that store has an ashkaka, that means that the person who is giving the ashkaka goes to that satellite bakery, and he makes sure that the ashkaka is given on the individual satellite bakery, which could technically service about 400 Dunkin' Donuts, up to 400 Dunkin' Donuts. I happen to go to one facility in Mid-Hudson. They certify, they provide 450 Dunkin' Donuts with their donuts. Now, so you're going into a uncertified Dunkin' Donuts store. You cannot buy any of the donuts, even though the mix is going to be kosher, because the mix that they're using at a kosher Dunkin' Donuts is the same mix they're using at a non-kosher Dunkin' Donuts. But because of the fact that there is no way to know what's actually produced in the same deep fryer if it's a non-certified bakery, you cannot buy donuts from Dunkin' Donuts if it's not certified. What about coffee? So it's very interesting. Coffee and Dunkin' Donuts is very unique, because when if you ever noticed in Dunkin' Donuts, and I studied this a lot, is when you go into a Dunkin' Donuts store, they have somebody at the coffee station, and then they have somebody at the sandwich station. Then they have somebody at the dishwashing station. Everyone has their own jobs and their own ideas of things that they're supposed to be doing. They're going to be washing dishes. This one's going to be making coffee. This one's going to be making sandwiches. So when you're going to Dunkin' Donuts, you're able to buy unflavored coffee because of the fact, first of all, unflavored coffee does not require ashkaka. Many people say, oh, what about the bishul akum part of it? You're not going to have a non-Jewish person cook for you. There's no concern of bishul akum because coffee is roid mayim. And if it's roid mayim, there's no issue of bishul akum because you don't need a non-Jewish person to cook up water for you. You can just drink it as is. So coffee is perfectly permitted if it's unflavored. It happens to be Dunkin' Donuts also had flavored coffee, which is certified by the Star K, but things can change when you're dealing with flavors, which we'll get to a little later on in this year, how flavors and how complicated it is to certify that. So you're going into Dunkin' Donuts, you're able to buy unflavored coffee. The shots many times are dairy. If you mock with Al Bisrael, you have to be careful with only buying products if you mock with it doesn't have any dairy in it. What about buying the iced coffees? Again, the iced coffee is the same thing as regular coffee, and that would be permitted to be bought at a Dunkin' Donuts. And the reason why Dunkin' Donuts is allowed, even though they sell bacon and they sell many non-kosher ingredients, because Dunkin' Donuts does not have a dishwasher. The dishwasher obviously is going to be considered a kli rishon. If you're going to put the bacon ingredients together with the Dunkin' Donuts coffee equipment, that's going to be an issue of tariffs. But Dunkin' Donuts has a three-compartment sink. They rinse out the coffee utensils in the sink, and there's no concern of them mixing it together with the non-kosher utensils. No, they don't wash it together. It's washed individual, and there's no reason for them to even mix it together because they don't want the bacon-flavored coffee. They want coffee to taste like coffee, and they're not going to mix it together. Now, what about going into a Starbucks? That's a very hotly debated question. Happens to be that I'm more of a Dunkin' Donuts person, so the research that's done in general was more for Dunkin' Donuts. Starbucks, it's very, very complicated because if you go into a Starbucks, they're using a tremendous amount of non-kosher, which they do sell sandwiches and things like that, and they also have a dishwasher. When they have a dishwasher, like we spoke before, anytime you use heat involved, that's when you have a transfer of taste. And because you're going to have a transfer of taste, there's going to be bacon and things in the same dishwasher, and they're using the equipment to make the coffee and putting it together in the dishwasher. Therefore, many rabbanim felt that you should not buy any coffee in Starbucks. It's more like complicated. They don't use more than just one or two pieces of equipment. They're more machmor with that. There are some rabbanim that are machmor even for regular coffee, but there's room to be lenient if you want to buy a regular coffee at a Starbucks. When you're getting into complicated drinks and they're using a lot more of equipment and mixing it together with the non-kosher, that's where a person should be stringent. Part of the reasons why the rabbanim were even stringent with a regular coffee is because they would felt that all the leniencies that apply to permit a coffee, even something which is a little bit more complicated, a person would not rely on in the regular house. If you wouldn't rely on a regular house, start bringing in different spharas. Why to be mako? They felt that it's not a reason to be mako when a person is traveling or when a person wants to buy coffee. So you're going into, you're traveling, you're going into Dunkin' Donuts, you have the Starbucks. What about going into a rest stop or even a grocery store and you want to buy a Pepsi? And I get this question a lot. We happen to certify Pepsi bodily facilities. But in order for you to understand the answers to all these questions which come up, you also have to visit a tremendous amount of facilities, which you don't have the ability to do. And that's why within the hour shiur, you'll have the ability to visit all the facilities they need to visit in order to understand the ins and outs and the questions that come up. And once you have the ideas, you'll know the answers to all these questions. Now, the way Pepsi works is the following. Pepsi in New York is owned by Honickman, and he has a lot of different bottling facilities in the New York area. He has a co-packer in Massachusetts, which he does business with. And Pepsi is different than Coke, because Coca-Cola corporate owns all the bottling facilities, and Pepsi does not. Pepsi corporate gets licensed out by certain manufacturers. They want to make Pepsi products. So Pepsi wants you to taste the same way as it does in New York. They want you to taste it like you go to California. They want the same ingredients. Now, I personally know all the ingredients that go into Pepsi. So I don't see any Pepsi here. I see Coke. Okay, fine. Even though it's not the cupcake, I'll let you guys drink it. But either way, Pepsi works very, very simply. They have a tremendous amount of sugar that comes to the facility. And when they're done with that tanker of sugar, then they bring another tanker of sugar. And they mix it together with this syrup that's very, very corrosive. And they sometimes will have like a raspberry syrup and a blueberry, lemon, lime, and all these different syrups. Parenthetically, when you're dealing with flavors like raspberry, I was actually at a facility last week. They have 15,000 ingredients in that facility. Why? Because they're not going to necessarily put in raspberries and blackberries in your black cherry Pepsi or black cherry Coke, because then the bottle of Pepsi or Coke would be $20. They use chemicals to make it taste like the real thing. So people ask a question about grape soda. There's no grapes in grape soda. Okay, there's 50 to 60 chemicals in the product to make it taste like grape. Natural chemicals. Either way, so you go with the Pepsi and they're mixing the flavors and all the ingredients together, the corrosive ingredients. Then they go into the batching kettle and they'll mix it around. And then they bottle about 1,000 counts per minute. And they, many facilities do bottles and they do cans. It depends on what obviously the customer wants and the public wants. So they'll mix the product in the kettle. Now the kettle is all cold. Whenever you have a kettle that's using cold, there's no transfer of taste. Only when there's heat is involved is transfer of taste. In addition to kovish, if something is in the kettle for 24 hours, then you have kovish, then also it's sort of kovish from a bushel, and you consider like the utensil is heated. At Pepsi, it's not the case. Pepsi, everything is changed very often. They constantly batch in products, and there's no issues of kashrus with it. Now, what about using the equipment for non-kosher? Again, because there's no kovish, there's no 24-hour time frame, they're only mixing cold. There is no concern, even if they would make non-kosher, which they do. So because we know all the ingredients of Pepsi and we know that there's no issues of kovish, obviously you could try to buy a product that has a cup K on it, because you know that the facility is kosher certified and obviously the flavor is certified as well. But if you see a K on a product, all that means is the product is kosher. But who certifies a K on a product? It's a trick question. Why? Because it depends on where the product is actually manufactured and distributed. If it's manufactured and distributed in New York and the surrounding areas, it has to be backed up by the about 1,400 kosher agencies in the world. It has to be backed up by one of them. However, if it's distributed in California and other states, the manager could decide, you know what, the product is kosher, therefore we'll put a K on it. It doesn't have to be backed up by any of the agencies. However, when you're dealing with Pepsi, a K on the product, which I've seen recently in different communities, you'll see a K on a product. Why? Because Pepsi only has the ability to sell their product in certain zip codes. Okay, so if you go into a Pepsi bottling facility in New York, they may be able to sell in New Jersey. Sometimes during Pesach, they'll be able to expand it to Massachusetts. But if you're going to upstate New York, many times you won't have a Kaf K, you'll have a Diamond K, you'll have a KVH, you'll have other Ashkachas, because those bottling facilities out there are under that Ashkacha as opposed to New York and New Jersey area. So if you're going to see a K in a product, all that means is that the syrup is kosher, but the bottling facility is not certified. So anytime it says a K on it and it says made bottle in the Pepsi bottling authority, you would be able to purchase the product, because again, we know all the ingredients that go into it. There's no issues of coverage, there's no equipment issues, and they're using the same formula and the same recipe in New York as in other locations. There's two exceptions. One is Welch's grape juice. Welch's is a big product with the INSF, which we won't get into now, but if you're going to have a product which has a Welch's grape product or even a Hawaiian punch, those products are made on a pasteurizer. Pasteurizer is about 180 degree oven that the product goes into, and if it's not a certified facility, we have no way of knowing what's also produced on the same oven. Obviously, if you're going to a facility that has an Ashkacha, we know what they're making on the same equipment. But when you're dealing with a facility that's not kosher, you would not be able to purchase the Hawaiian punch or the Welch's grape juice, because it's made in a different kind of facility. It's made like in a juice facility, and you have to have an Ashkacha on it. This is only in the United States. When you deal with the, out of the United States, there's many, many different variables how other countries produce product or which ingredients they use and where they come from. So this applies only in the United States. Grape juice is a totally different discussion. So continuing on our discussion with drinks and beverages before we get to other things, what about Slurpees? Okay, you go into 7-Eleven and you want to buy a Slurpee. Now, for many of the places which I've spoken to over the years, I can tell you that most kids and even adults drink Slurpee. How is it possible to drink a Slurpee? What could be the problems with going into a 7-Eleven and drinking the Slurpee? Now, there's about 95 flavors of Slurpee that are kosher, but there's 5-6 flavors that are not kosher. So if you have a Coke flavor in the machine, how do you know that the day before there was no grape flavor? For argument's sake, let's say grape is not kosher, there's no grape flavor before in the machine. The truth is, let's assume that there was a grape flavor in the machine, and still, perhaps it will not be an issue. Why? Because 7-Eleven works in the following way as well. We used to certify 7-Eleven on Avenue J and many other places until it came a point where people were purchasing products without an hashkafa beforehand. They said, you know what, we had so much business before as well, it didn't really uptick with the Tufke or any other hashkafa that we had on the Slurpee, so we were going away from giving hashkafa on a specific store. So what happens is they have this syrup that comes in a box, has a bag in it, has a box. There's no hashkafa on the actual box. Instead, you have a list from all the different kosher agencies that supply these Slurpees with the hashkafa, and they say these Slurpee flavors are certified. So you have to make sure that the flavor is kosher. So let's assume they have a Coke flavor in the Slurpee machine. But beforehand, there was grape. Now let's say grape is not kosher. 7-Eleven has a cleaning procedure before each flavor that's put into the machine because they want people to taste Coke and they don't want people to taste like grape flavor together with Coke. In addition, you have to be concerned that when they're putting that non-kosher flavor in, you're coming right after they put the flavor in. The way it works in 7-Eleven is they don't change flavors every day. If you look at it, you'll see if you keep on going to 7-Eleven stores for yourself or for your kids, they'll see this Coke and this Coke, and it lasts for months and months. It's constantly the same flavor of the syrup in the Slurpee machine. So you have to be concerned that you're going to be coming in to buy a Coke, and the day before or 5 minutes before there was a Pepsi, there was a grape rather. It's very, very uncommon, very unlikely. You want to really mock it. And to make sure that you're going to buy a kosher flavor, there's some rabbanim that felt that you just take a little bit more of the Coke out, and therefore any of the grape that perhaps was in there before goes down the drain, and even the non-kosher component in the grape flavor is bottled to begin with. That's why they're very, very makeable with this. I actually asked one of the leading rabbanim many years ago about going into a 7-Eleven and buying a Slurpee, and he said, you know what, go behind the machine and take the Slurpee from behind the back. First of all, they'll never let you in the back. And secondly, I don't think the Rav knew what a Slurpee was because you can't go in the back and pull it. He's probably referring to like a slush where you could pull it from the back of the machine and then add your own flavors. But Slurpee, it's not possible to do that. And therefore, many of our and especially people nowadays, you see kids lining up, they could buy a Slurpee from a 7-Eleven. Again, you're dealing with a lot of flavors and natural flavors and raspberry flavors and a lot of other chazerai that goes into it. But as far as the actual kosher is concerned, there is no issue, even though there's many, many flavors that are going on into a 7-Eleven store and buying a Slurpee. Now, once we're talking about 7-Eleven, this question comes up a lot, is that you see a showcase of pastries in 7-Eleven. And I'm not making this stuff up. Yesterday, when I was trying to take some pictures for the status, which many of you commented, I walked into a 7-Eleven and I saw a guy with a yarmulke going into the pastry case and taking a donut. Is that allowed? Well, you have to understand how 7-Eleven works, which many of you probably don't. And I don't expect you to know how it works. The way 7-Eleven pastry showcase works is the following. They are certified by a very reputable kosher agency, and they make all the donuts in Long Island. In a large facility in Long Island, they make all the donuts and then it gets shipped to all the specific 7-Eleven stores. Again, this factory can service 500 different 7-Eleven stores. But even though the factory is kosher and the donuts are coming from the factory, because of the fact that it's coming loose and it's not a packaged item, there's no way of tracking the actual donut to make sure that if they run out of the donut one day at night, they want to make sure the customers are serviced, that they're actually going to buy perhaps other donuts just to service the customers, even though it's very highly unlikely that they'll do that because everyone knows it's a 7-Eleven donut, it's a 7-Eleven pastry, and the stores have to make sure to order from that specific vendor. Nevertheless, it is something which is not, you know, something which we don't follow, and it's not monitored. And because we're not monitoring the actual 7-Eleven store, you cannot buy a fresh pastry at a 7-Eleven showcase because of that concern. We have no way of knowing where this actual donut came from. But if it's going to be a packaged item, a packaged pastry, they're going to have hashgacha on it. For the most part, there's a few different facilities that produce a 7-Eleven. There's one in Maryland, there's one in New Jersey, and there's one in New York. In this area, there's obviously more, like if you go up north, there's in Rhode Island, and there's other states up north as well. But for the most part, it's going to be a hashgacha on the package. You can buy it. If there's no hashgacha on the package, you would not be able to buy it. Now, you want to travel, and you want to know maybe your fleishiks, and you want to perhaps eat something which has dairy equipment, and you want to see something which has DE, which stands for dairy equipment. What about something that has dairy, but you're not sure whether it's considered dairy or not? The question is, could you buy something like that? So again, you have to understand how manufacturing works. You go into a cookie facility. They're making cookies. What makes a product dairy? The product is made with powdered milk. And there's this discussion between the Hartzvi and the Tzitz Eliezer regarding powdered milk. If that's considered the same Gzeira as Chol Yisrael, it has to be Chol Yisrael. Perhaps powdered milk is different. Why do you think powdered milk is different? How do you make powdered milk? Powdered milk is made with a spray dryer. I personally go to spray dry facilities. Spray drying is a four-story building that has an atomizer on top, which is like a ball that spins very fast. You put the liquid into the kettle. It goes through a pipe up to the atomizer, spins tremendously fast. The liquid is turned into a dry powder, and you have your powdered milk. Obviously, there's other ingredients as well. There's transfer agents and different things that are made to make the product not stick and bake properly. And that's when you have powdered milk. The Hartzvi, like I said, you makbid chol Yisrael, maybe you don't have to be makbid when it comes to powdered milk. It's totally a different product. And many of the products you have out there are not made with real milk because the shelf life on real milk is very short, as opposed to powdered milk, where it's a very, very long shelf life. So many of the manufacturers are going to be using powdered milk. So now you're going into a factory, they're making cookies. It's dairy. Why is it dairy? Because they're using a dairy mix. So if they're using a dairy mix, the product is going to be Hafke dairy because it's dairy. What about if you want to make a product that is Parv? Either the factory is not using dairy to begin with, it's Parv, or they'll kosher. Now, in order for you to kosher a factory, you don't just turn on the oven and that's it. You have to make sure there's 24 hours downtime. Once you have 24 hours downtime, the Mashgiach goes to the factory and he makes sure that it's cleaned out well. Many times, Mashgiachim report back to me, oh, it's not cleaned out properly. We have to do another cleaning and another cleaning, and the machines are down and the clock is ticking. And if the clock is ticking and the machines are down, company's not making any money because they only make money if the machines are operating and making product. If they're not making product, there's no income coming in with no machines operating properly. So the companies don't want to shut down. So what happens is they say, you know what, Rabbi, fine, we'll make power products, but that's it. Now we don't want to do power anymore. Now, no kosherization. We want to use the same equipment. When you're using the same equipment, that is when we come to dairy equipment. There's no dairy in the actual product. It's dairy equipment. It's DE. Now, according to halacha, there's two halachas which apply to DE. One is if you're makbid to wait 6 hours, which most of us are makbid to wait 6 hours after eating meat, you can actually have a dairy equipment item within 6 hours because, again, there's no dairy in the product. Rebelsky Tzal is the one that designed the DE symbol. Many hashgachas do take on the DE symbol. There are many reputable hashgachas which only have a D symbol, which can be quite confusing because you don't know if actually the product is dairy or not, even though it says a D on the product. For the most part, if it says dairy, it's going to be dairy. But many times, there are many products out there that cannot be, in fact, dairy, even though it says dairy on it. Fine. So now we're dealing with the factory. They're making pastries. They're making the dairy cookies. Now they want to make parva cookies. You have parva, and then you have a product which is made with dairy equipment. There's no dairy in the actual mix. It's just made on DE. The other halacha you have to know if you're eating DE is that Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, that's all felt, that if you're makbid on Chol Yisrael, you don't have to be makbid on DE because of the fact that there's no dairy in there. It's only an equipment issue. And Chazal felt that you want to be makbid on Chol Yisrael, fine. When it comes to the DE and dairy equipment, there's no concern with that. Now, many times people have a question. You're buying a product and it says contains wheat and it contains soy, but it doesn't say dairy. Now, most of the companies out there nowadays are very makbid on allergens. And if they're makbid on allergens, they're going to make sure that there's no dairy in the product. So if it says contains wheat and contains soy, but it has a dairy symbol on it, that 9 out of 10 times is going to be DE. And the companies are getting closer now to actually using the DE symbol. But that's a way to tell if it says contains soy, contains wheat, but doesn't say contains dairy. For the most part, it's going to be DE. But there are some exceptions. Because many times you'll see an ingredient that you don't necessarily recognize that can have some sort of dairy component. But there are products out there that if you you aren't sure, you call the kosher agency and say, hey, this product doesn't look dairy, doesn't have any dairy ingredients, perhaps. Could you just verify with me if it's actually dairy or it's only a dairy equipment issue? But many times also you have a product that says may contain traces. It says may contain traces. That is what we call an allergen statement. The federal government says in order for there to be parts per million of dairy in the factory, we have to put an allergen statement out, and therefore it is an issue of an allergen, but not kosher. That product is completely pyrev, and it's only there as an allergen statement, and you couldn't be able to eat that product. Many times people are concerned that perhaps it is dairy. Again, the company has to put it out there, but for as far as a kosher standpoint, there's no issues in that regard. That's main questions that come up is with regard to labeling. You understand how the manufacturing process works. You know the different symbols out there, and you know why certain products are problematic and certain products are not in regards to dairy. Now, you're still traveling and you're going on the road and you realize, okay, Pepsi is not so healthy for me. I don't want to drink soda and you don't want to drink, you want to eat certain other products out there because of you're not in the mood. You want to go into the supermarket and you want to buy cut-up fruit. You want to buy cut-up fruit, but for cut-up fruit comes in many varieties. It comes with honeydew, cantaloupe, and pineapple. It also comes with strawberries and blackberries and raspberries. Now, I don't know if any of you know this, but it's more common for you to eat one insect than it is to have a cheeseburger. Okay, so many of the kosher agency obviously are making sure that they're washing the vegetables properly, but you have to realize something also. If you're buying a leading brand bag of lettuce, you will find the bug. It is common to find the bug. Why? Because the kosher agencies are only telling you that they're washing it to bring back down the checking below 10%. The Mishnah is Yaakov and the Shuva about whether you have to check a certain amount of the percentage. And he says, if it's 10%, you have a chiyuv to do bedika. If it's less than 10%, there's no chiyuv of bedika of checking anymore. But there is a 2%, 3%, whatever chance of you finding a bug, it's still common. But they're making it that you don't have to actually check each bag when you buy it. And that's why you're paying the hashtaka to check and clean it. But if you're going to a supermarket, you want to buy cut up fruit. If it's a large supermarket, like a Stop and Shop and a ShopRite and these things, you're able to buy cut up fruit because they have dedicated knives. The knives they use are a fruit knife. It's in the fruit section. They have a fruit area where they cut up all the fruit and you would be able to purchase it. But if you're going to go into a ShopRite and Stop and Shop and buy fruit that also has raspberries and blackberries, that's not allowed because again, there's insects in there. There's no rabbi washing the produce to make sure that there's a hashkafa on it. So therefore you would not be able to buy any of the cut up fruit that consists of strawberries, blackberries, and raspberries. No, because the knives that they have in the fruit section are kept in the fruit section. And even when they sharpen all the knives, a lot of times they're color-coded and they're kept in the fruit area. There are some places that say that, for example, if they're going to cut it with other things as well, even though it's not common in a large supermarket, that the amount of volume that they're cutting with the fruit and the vegetables with that knife, so they're going to cut some fish and then what? They're going to cut thousands of fruits and vegetables with it in order to make your little fruit cup. So there's no concern either because all the mamash that's on there has been washed away with all the volume. And that's assuming that they're using the same knives, which under research was done, that they're using dedicated knives for fruit. But if you're going to a mom and pop store, that's different because they can use the knife to cut whatever else they want. There's their lunch one day, and therefore it would not be a good idea to start purchasing products from there. Now, you have your fruit, and now you want to have some bread. You want to take bread with you on your trips. It's usually very easy for you to figure out how to eat bread because you go to the supermarket here, you buy bread, it's pasisrael, there's no issue, it has hashkafa, so it's fine. But what about going and traveling and you don't have your local bakery? So you see like 647 bread or you see all these kinds of breads out there and you want to know it's considered pasisrael because you're makra pasisrael. So now very, very briefly, even though it's a share for itself, the way pasisrael works is very simple. You go into a factory, and the Jewish person's lighting the fire. That's very simple. You have a mashkiach very locally, and they're going to light your fire. It's pas yisrael. But many of the factories that are making these breads are not located in your backyard, right next to your house. They're large factories. They have tunnel ovens, which have 200 feet ovens to do a tremendous amount of volume of bread. There's no mashkiach lighting the fire, and you want to be makbid on pas yisrael. Now, there is a machlekes in the Shulchan Aruch in a couple of days, whether you're allowed to have pas palter. Pas palter means that bread baked by a baker. The Shulchan Aruch says it's pas yisrael available. You can't have pas palter, but luckily we have the Ramah that says you could have pas palter because even if it's pas yisrael available, the large supermarket chains that make breads, the Stop and Shops, and the Arnold's and the Frohhoffers and the Strohmans, all these kind of breads are considered a pas palter, and you would be able to eat the bread from there. But the question is, how are you able to tell if the bread is pas yisrael? There's another method to make the bread pas yisrael. That is, you put the oven on a certain temperature and it stays at that temperature, which is about 180 degrees. that bread is pasul shel, because the oven was lit by a Jew, and then the oven didn't go below that certain temperature, and therefore the initial baking was mishyachis back to the yid who lit the fire. There's another way of making pasul shel, and that is a glow plug. Now, a glow plug is usually used for diesel trucks, and it adds a certain amount of heat into the oven. And in the olden days, they used to have a kisem. You threw a kisem in the oven, and that was considered pasul shel because of the fact that the Jew put some sort of heat by throwing in a twig into the oven. Nowadays, that's a glow plug, and the mashgiach lights the glow plug, and you have pasul shel. Many kosher agencies do not hold of it. I happened to have asked the Herschel Schefter, the Shlita, many years ago, that if I'm giving an hashkacha to a bread, and I don't write on the bread how it's pasul shel, maybe it's neivas das. We're writing the Sefer on Rabelski's, in all honesty, we're going through this question because of the fact, if I'm giving hashkacha on the bread, and I'm not telling you how it's pasul shel, then maybe you don't want to go in that method. You don't hold of that method. So if you don't hold of it, and I don't tell you how it's pasul shel, maybe it's misleading. So Herschel Schefter said, the reality is you're relying on our hashkacha, so you're also relying on the method and how we create pasul shel as well. So now, it doesn't say pasul shel on the package. How are you going to be able to tell it's pasul shel? Usually, if you're going to a large bakery, Stop and Shop, and all these different shop rights, and they're making their own breads, it's not going to be pasul shel. Because even though we have an arrangement placed in one facility, they don't own any bakeries. They go into a large manufacturer, they go into Bimbo, which we certify about 45 plants across the country, and they make a tremendous amount of product for these other distributors and other private labels. But again, there's no pasul shel arrangement in place in all these different locations. And because of that, if you're going to take a regular large supermarket brand, for the most part, it's not going to be pasul shel. But one question we always get is, nowadays, people are trying to be more health conscious, and you don't want to have usually white bread. You want to have a 5-grain bread. You want to have 10 grams of fiber, whatever else it is. And in the pasul shel world, it doesn't exist. You don't have just higher end breads necessarily in the pasul shel world. So the Mechaber and Kufi Beis Sifhei says, but you don't have to have pasul shel in that situation because the quality is much better in pas palter, and there is more health benefits, and there's more fiber, and there's more whatever else is in the bread that's going to give you more of a health conscious dinner using the bread. So there's no issue of having that bread as pasul shel because of the value involved. There's also a discussion in the Chalkin Pnyanim whether, as far as pricing is concerned, and that is something which people can take into consideration. If you're paying 99 cents for a bread, versus $3.50, it makes a big difference. But obviously, again, you have to figure out what money you're going to be spending on kosher food and pasul shel, and how much you want to be careful with that when you're going to do all your different purchases of your products.
What about bread with no symbol at all?
No, bread with no symbol needs an hashkacha, and you can't buy bread without an hashkacha because there's also many different ingredients. In the olden days, you used to have bread and you used to have yeast and a few ingredients. Now there's dough conditioners and a lot of other ingredients that go into bread, which make it have a huge shelf life. You have to realize that bread is not made with one day shelf life. Many times these breads are made with a very, very long shelf life, which reminds me of like Pesach food. You know, Pesach bakeries start operating now in August, and the product has to be fresh till April. So you can imagine what goes into the product in order to make sure that it's fresh 6 months down the road. What? No, dairy bread is a totally different discussion because of the fact that there's, you know, Mechaber speaks about if it's dairy, it has to be different sizes. If it doesn't have hashkacha, it could be also dairy in there, but even with the hashkacha on it, many times you're going to have an hashkacha, but it won't be on dairy bread because the bread is made for the masses. And if it's made for the masses, it doesn't have the different surah, which Chazal speak about, and it has to be a small amount. That's the whole discussion which we had with English muffins, because English muffins are dairy, but the dairy is batal, and also has a different surah. It doesn't look like bread, and it's not the same surah, and the Chazal speak about why that's considered differently, and that's why bread is not going to be able to be dairy unless you're making it in your home, as opposed to English muffins, which you will be able to have dairy. There's a tremendous amount of topics which we could talk about, but I want to hear what questions that you have as well, because we can go on for many, many hours. But I do know that people are going to start wanting to daven Ma'ariv soon. So let's take some of the questions that people have asked over the last 40 minutes or so. Yes.
Any kosher questions, just all that we spoke about now?
Let's start with kosher, not Ben and Jerry's. and then we'll go to everything else, whatever's on your mind. Okay.
I'm dairy free, right?
Yeah.
So I do look at the traces and may contain. So the traces, may contain traces of, that's a government regulated statement.
Correct. May contain traces of is completely non-dairy.
Completely.
According to halacha, according to the FDA, they still have to have it in the factory. It's part of the world. Yeah.
Right. And it says dairy free also.
Yeah, dairy free. It could be that some of the factories that make dairy free, like according to halacha, for example, the non-dairy creamer is really dairy, even though the government says non-dairy, because of the component that's in the ingredient, halacha says it's dairy, but the government says it's not. So you have to really figure out those things as well.
But if it is just dairy equipment, you can eat it. After,
it depends. If you're Sephardi, you can eat it with, and if you're Ashkenazi, you can have
Okay, so you shouldn't eat it with if you're Ashkenazi.
Correct. If you want to have an ISIS that have D on it, it's perfectly fine.
The ice with the D.
Yeah, right? ISIS with the D. It depends. If you make it on B, then you can have it after, you know, meat, your meal, but not together with it. Yes.
That's a question about this. Some of them have OK, and some of them you have the label on it that is
Che. Oh, the sticker?
Yeah.
Okay, so the sticker basically is not worth anything. Okay, so the sticker is put on after the fact, and it's impossible for you to check after the product is already in the bag. So anything that has a sticker on it that's required hashkafa, you shouldn't be purchasing, because the sticker is basically there because the guy's getting paid a few dollars. No, the OK is on there, and the sticker is because they want to charge a few extra dollars to have a few different names in Hebrew on it. Yes, if it has hashkafa on it, the same basic thing, but the sticker, the company is able to charge more because the sticker has some Hebrew letters on it. Yes.
More about
yeah, traces of dairy means that it's not dairy, it's just traces
milk.
Of milk. Yeah. Milk derivatives as well. As long as it has traces, it's not real dairy. Yeah, Michelle.
I have a friend, he has a slachtaus, okay? He kills lamb and veal. Okay. Once a week, once a month, he kills and the answer is star K and the OU. Okay. They do the run, the star came on Shechem and the Oyu Mashkechem are there the entire time. The Shechem is the same Shechem for both Oyu and star K. It's a joint, it's done jointly. Now, since he owns the plant, when it goes into packaging, he, depending on what he needs, he'll do 60% Oyu, 40% star K. I needed lamb, and he said, I only have star K, but according to this, the exact same plant, the exact same run, the only time it is a change is in boxing and labeling. My hashkafa does not allow me to use star K, but they do allow me to use OU. But I told them that it's running the same plant, and the mashkichim will say mashkichim, and they'll use it at the same time. So they called the OU, and the rabbi of the plant said, I don't know, if it doesn't have OU on it, then we didn't get an extra on it.
So that's something you have to bring up with the OU and then the star K. we don't really do any meats in the industry. And
whatever it is.
No, I mean, a lot of times you have a joint hashkafa, but the question is what the other hashkafa is doing and what...
No, it's not a joint hashkafa, it's the one process, one day of killing.
So there must be a reason why the OU wants to have a certain amount of product under their label and why... So that's something you have to take up with you. It doesn't seem like it's an issue at all.
The OU and the RC of this division, he says, I know the plan, but if the box doesn't have OU on it, then we need to get
So nothing I will say will change the mind of your Rava Maksher. So even if I would tell you that the product is perfectly okay, it's something that you have to deal with together with the Rava Maksher. For some reason, they have some issue with only accepting a certain product and not the other product. Yeah, question.
Something that comes up a lot is using non-kosher microchips.
Yeah.
I agree with you, let's say Bruno Mark, ready for microwave meals or my own stuff at home. How does it work with microwaves? What is allowed? Am I allowed to use an operation microwave?
So that's an excellent question. That's an excellent question. It comes up a lot in hotels. And it's a very, very common question. Now, Rabelsky itself felt that if you actually clean out the microwave properly, and you put a cup of water in a styrofoam cup for about 30 seconds, it puts the air in it circulates all the air, and you'll see a lot of steam in the microwave. And if you kosher it that way, it will be fine. Or alternatively, you can actually double wrap it. A double wrapping is not really required. You only require one wrapping, but there is a concern that the first wrapping might have a hole in it. So that's why we double wrap the product. But it comes up a lot in hotels, and microwave ovens are constantly being koshered that way, and there's no concern of using it in that manner. Depends if it has a glass in there. Yeah, it depends how. It depends also how big the cup is. Yes, so that should be fine as well. Yes.
It does. There was no.
No, it doesn't beer cup.
There was no waiting period after the cup.
No.
A kosher food establishment that has been working, they use the microwave.
That has been a bishlakim. Oh, no, the Rishon Lezamer, speaking about Shabbos. Many places consider the microwave oven does not apply to bishlakim, even though there are machmirim with it. So that's something which is shulchan malachim. It's not cooking. And also, if you're reheating food, there's no issue with bishlakim either. So many times, it's not cooking something like a chil, it is reheating food, which is already pre-cooked. it's not a good idea to anyway have your use the same microwave oven. You should have a dedicated let them have a dedicated work area with the employees having microwaves. Yeah, I mean, generally, if you're going to have an ashkafa on a store like that, then either the food is not cooked, and the food is cooked already, and you're not cooking it out initially, so there's no additional akum. And then we're dealing with Dunkin' Donuts, many have the question about the eggs, that you're buying egg sandwiches at Dunkin' Donuts, it has an ashkafa, but the non-Jewish person is cooking up the eggs. The eggs are already pre-cooked, the egg comes in frozen hard like a rock, and it's a frozen cube or round, depends on what type of egg product, and the non-Jewish person is not actually cooking it, it's already a pre-cooked product, so that's not a concern.
About Dunkin' Donuts, if there's one that you don't hold the store specifically, but you know that they're getting the donuts from a different area, they're cooked in the other area, or they're just brought in?
They're brought in fresh in that area. And
so then they're fine. Let's say you don't hold them, let's say my mom, the local shop out here. But still be able. I'm saying, but like a donut, you would be able.
He's actually giving the hashkafa on the facility that manufactures the donuts. What he's not doing.
Queens also. I'm saying.
No, if it has an hashkafa on the store, then he's doing it. Any place that has his hashkafa, he's going to the satellite bakery to make sure that those donuts are under his hashkafa. He's going to the stores as well, but he's going to the actual satellite bakery to make sure the donuts are good. But many times, if not all times, when you're going to a Dunkin' Donuts that has hashkafa, it's only going on the donuts and not going on the Baskin Robbins. You have to read the
rules. Right, so there could be multiples that share going to the satellites?
No, usually the satellite is certified by the same person that's doing the stores.
No, but I'm saying like...
the vow runner of Queens might be...
Right, no, usually, that vow will be doing the satellite baking and also be doing 30 Dunkin' Donuts stores with the same owner. Or they'll get a few owners together and they'll make one satellite baking that's applying to all the different stores that they under their umbrella. Yeah. You're getting what?
If there was.
No, the donuts come in fresh from the satellite bakery. No, they're not when we got. A lot of times they warm up the bagels, but again, the bagels are frozen and they're not. It's not pasta swell, but there's no issue with pasta because they're just rewarming it. They're not cooking at the beginning. No, donuts are never rewarmed in the actual bakery. They'll warm up other stuff, but not the donuts.
How about
this?
Is that because OU has more comrades than
OK? No, I mean, there's many manufacturers out there in the world, and you can't get to every plant that's out there. Sometimes the OU will have different contracts with different companies that own 50 plants, 100 plants, or they'll have different people that have a relationship with the OU, so they'll have OU. There's so many different ashkafas and so many different plants and different reasons why certain factories are certified by one ashkafa over the other. You have to also realize that just because it has a Hebrew lettering on a product doesn't mean that's kosher. I personally am involved with business development, which means I go with the factories that are not kosher and convince them to get kosher certified for the cupcake. And I've been to factories where they said, and I asked them, when's the last time the rabbi was here? And it's a very weak ashkafa. I don't even know if the rabbi is still alive. And he says, oh yeah, he hasn't been there in 10 years. Okay, so just because it has Hebrew lettering and it has some symbol on there with a nice little K symbol, doesn't mean that it has to be something which you approve of and just consume of.
Can I give you a brand to certify?
What? Make a call and then see if they're interested, you know? Okay, I want to thank everyone for coming. There's a tremendous amount more to do. We have to bench. We have to have an Irish. So thank you and have a wonderful evening.